Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Prediction Show here on Fightful. I am Stephanie Chase, and today we are predicting SummerSlam, and I am joined by the legendary Wade Keller from the Pro Wrestling Torch. Wade, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm doing great, Stephanie. Good to be on with you. It'll be the roles reversed because you've been a guest on my show a few times recently, so this will be fun.
You know, Wade, I don't want to embarrass you, but I was talking to a friend last night and saying that I had invited you on my show. And I actually said to him, I'm so nervous to host with Wade. I feel so weird hosting. It's like asking David Bowie to be your backing singer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'll take that. I'll take that. A little embarrassed, but thank you.
So that's how I feel right now, but I'm so excited to talk to you about SummerSlam. It is a 7-match card, which is a big card for WWE because they usually do like 5 or 6. So we've got some really big matches to go through. The order that we're going to go through them in is completely made up by me because I think as we'll get into, it's quite unclear what the SummerSlam main event is. But I'm excited to talk to you about it, Wade. Everyone watching, I want to know as well what your predictions are for SummerSlam. You can send those in the chat. You can send us a super chat, which helps me out a lot, and I will read it on screen. But before we get into it, let's hear a little word from our overlord, Sean Rossap, who's going to tell us about our sponsor, BetOnline.
BetOnline.ag is the official betting partner of Fightful. 100% of the time when you get the odds from Fightful, they are coming from BetOnline.ag. And it's not just wrestling, it's not just MMA and boxing. It's football, it's basketball, baseball, hockey. They have the earliest lines. You can bet big with the high limits and rebet functionality. They have the fastest payouts with winnings paid in minutes and the industry's best bonuses on every qualifying deposit. They've been trusted for 25 plus years. It's not some fly-by-night company. BetOnline AG has been there. They've done that. In addition, they're trusted by millions. They've got VIP rewards programs and a ton of popular games. BetOnline.ag, that's where I go to make my bets. That's where I suggest you go to, my friends. Please just bet what you can. and bet responsibly.
BetOnline.ag. Thank you. Now, Weird, I'm heading to SummerSlam, actually. Well, I say hopefully just because I'm a person from the UK, currently living in Canada, crossing the border to the US. So always a little nerve-wracking, but yeah. I am heading there on Friday. And it's a show that like looks really good to me. Like, what's your excitement level for it?
Oh, I think this is a really good example of what a good place WWE is in right now. I mean, they just, they know who they are. They've got their top wrestlers in place. They've got two separate brands with their own identities, but each contributing to the show. There's, you know, a lot of title matches, which is both good and bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a sense that make, like you mentioned, it's hard to know what the main event's going to be because of match order. But I will say, I don't feel that they're putting the title matches on this show because they're title matches. They're putting them on the show because the wrestlers involved feel like their rivalry merits being included on SummerSlam. And it is more matches than usual, but it's also not nearly as many matches as AEW puts on. There's a lot of good wrestlers in WWE who aren't making this show. But if the goal is to serve the fans and not overstay your welcome, I think they put together a really strong lineup here.
Yeah, I think so too. I know I was at Money in the Bank as well that had six matches. And I also was at Forbidden Door, and I did say that I thought Forbidden Door was way too many. And then the pushback on WWE is maybe it's way too little. And I think that what they did at Money in the Bank, it was probably too little, but then they didn't do matches that I thought were unnecessary. Like, for example, there was no Liv Morgan match because they were waiting for Rhea to come back, and now we're getting the big Liv Morgan match. So I think it's really good, and it's a good example of how Triple H seems to book these pay-per-views, where it's not like everyone deserves to be in the card. It's the matches that have been really built up, put on the card at the right time. So I think the lineup is great, and yeah, it's proper hard to see what's going to go on last. Do you have a feeling of what they might do last?
Yeah, I've been discussing it for a couple of weeks as this lineup really took shape. I mean, the safe default position is Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa, because Cody's their top babyface. That's their top championship. The tipping point, I think, for a lot of people, including me, is if Paul Heyman or Roman Reigns is going to make an appearance, then that's going to be at the end of the show, because that's such a big deal. Mm-hmm. So my leaning is that way. But I mean, in terms of what the crowd is going to be interested in most, I mean, you can make a case for Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley. This storyline, I mean, for a big segment of the WWE's audience, is why they're watching Raw every week, what they're most interested in. And it's an opportunity, if WWE is looking for it, to put a women's championship match in the main event spot on a major show to elevate it. And even more important, Rhea Ripley's been gone for a while. You want to kind of let people know Rhea Ripley is a top, top star. She can be a draw for you. She's young. The fans are into her. She had an inopportune injury. But if you put her in the main event, that's it. But is a soap opera storyline with Liv Morgan enough? So, and then the other argument just is for CM Punk, Drew McIntyre. I think if this match happened 6 weeks ago, you can make a stronger case for it. I think the hype peaked a little bit. But those are my top candidates.
Yeah, for sure. Derek says here, if you would have showed me the card 4 months ago, I think it was weak. The booking and storytelling has created an increasingly interesting and highly anticipated event, epitome of good booking. That's strong praise there from Derek, but I totally get what he means. You can't say that any of these matches have been underdeveloped, really. There's something right with all of them. So the order I've put together, sorry, Wade, go on.
I was going to ask you, I'm curious what your order is, so we're on the same page.
Oh, okay. I feel like the thing hanging over it is Roman, whether or not Roman returns. And I would see that would end the show. But if he doesn't, I feel like Punk McIntyre, just because it won't necessarily be the best match technically, but I think that it's been such a long built story, and it's Punk's first like proper match back other than the Rumble. It's his first singles match. So I think they might want to do that. So yeah, for me, it hinges on, I feel like if Cody And because I don't think Triple H has the idea of like the title has to go on last the way that Tony seemed tied to. So I feel like if Cody and Solo is put on last, it will make me think that Roman is coming back.
I think a lot of people, if Cody and Solo goes on last, are going to be disappointed if they don't get a Roman return or at least a Paul Heyman return, or at the very least like the Usos showing up or Jimmy returning, which will feel kind of secondary. Yeah. The problem is I just don't think Solo Sikoa comes across as an actual threat to win the title. No, we could be proven wrong. WWE surprises us now and then, but there is sort of not a tell, but there's a pattern to WWE's booking where it's just, they're not going to spend Cody after his long journey to win the title. They're not going to have him lose the title. They don't need him to lose the title in order to be on the chase again. I think people want him to have a successful run. He hasn't had top tier opponents yet. And so to me, Cody keeping the title and facing higher, I say higher members of the bloodline, but who is that, you know, unless it's Jacob Fatu, and they haven't fully signaled that he's going to be the top guy yet. He could still end up being the crazed sidekick to Solo. But I think right now the fans looks at Jacob Fatu as the more intriguing of the two contenders. So if Solo was a stronger, contender and people thought he might win, then I wouldn't even have the asterisk of, well, only if Roman or Heyman show up. But again, Cody's their top star, you know, their top full-time active babyface, and that is a top title. So I think that's the safe, smart pick to go on last.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, let's get into the card. The order that I've decided to talk about them in is how interesting I think they are to talk about. So that's what I went with, because they're all pretty interesting, but there are levels to this. So no offense to any of the performers that are watching. I'm going to start off with Bayley versus Nia Jax, a women's championship match. Nia Jax, Queen of the Ring. Bayley, I think for this one, Bayley's title win at WrestleMania felt big just because people have like so much respect for Bayley and felt like sometimes that she's kind of more of like the bridesmaid of the four horsewomen, and they wanted her to get that big moment. But I don't think she's been booked very well as champion. And I think the first time that it seemed she was really getting anything that you could sink your teeth into was with Nia becoming Queen of the Ring and Nia being set up as her challenger and Nia having this alliance with Tiffany Stratton. So this one I think is pretty hard to predict because Tiffany does loom over it. I'm going to predict Nia wins. I think if anyone is going to make Nia Jax champion, it would be Triple H to do it with this story of Tiffany, but will Tiffany cash in? I'm not sure if they'll want to spend that already, but before we get into that, I'll ask you your thoughts, Wade. What do you think about Bayley versus Nia Jax?
I think at this stage of the rivalry, they're with Tiffany and Nia Jax, they're teasing the cash in, I think, somewhat clumsily at times, or in a forced way. And it wasn't really buying that Tiffany would do that at this stage. I think they want that pairing to be together for longer before they actually do a breakup or a cash in. I'm not ruling out the possibility Tiffany cashes in and then Nia's really mad, but that would constitute a turn probably, or Nia resenting her but still being linked with her. Those don't ring as they don't strike me as the more likely possibilities. I think what we see as a more likely possibility is Bayley winning and keeping the title for a while, and Nia Jax getting a title coming up short in this title shot, and then Tiffany getting a title shot, even with the Money in the Bank, and them kind of going back and forth for a while with chasing Bayley. I just think it's the beginning of the feud, and I think and even more so, it's the beginning of the dynamic between Tiffany and Nia. I think they put them together, and I could be wrong, but I don't think they put them together to have a quick breakup. I think there's potential there for them to play off each other. So when I think about the finishes to this match, the finishes of this match go through the filter of how can they extend the Tiffany Nia Jax dynamic and stretch it out. And if you have Nia Jax win and Tiffany cash in successfully right away, I think spent months of storyline right away. So I'm kind of leaning towards Bayley somehow retaining the title and then them circling back somehow to a rematch later on.
I think the more I think about it, the biggest reason I can see for Tiffany not cashing in is probably capitalism and WWE wanting Tiffany to have like the most custom briefcase possible.
We haven't seen that yet. You're right.
Like sell that to little girls, you know, go for it. So that's the main reason I actually think she might keep the briefcase. I could see her interfering though to help Nia. I think there's something interesting about the dynamic of like keeping your enemies closer, like Nia being the champion and her best friend being the person that has the money in the bank briefcase. But I think it would also be like an unfortunate end to Bayley's title reign that I just don't think has really lived up to the expectation of the moment.
I'm with you on Bayley. I've you know, ever since she returned, I've asked, you know, is she into this or just sort of in her collect a paycheck mode of her career? You know, she's accomplished so much and she's had setbacks in her injuries, and people say no, she shows up, she's enthusiastic and seems into her job and all that. So I think she and her fans are on a search for a magical moment for her again, where it does feel like she is a centerpiece top attraction in the women's division. Part of it is it's just hard to compete with what Rhea Ripley's been doing and the Liv Morgan storyline, and I get that. And she's a little bit in the shadow of Becky Lynch when Becky Lynch is around, and when Charlotte's around, she's portrayed as a bigger star. So all that works against her. But part of it is Bayley just hasn't really found her groove as a character at this point. You know, the kind of forced laugh. There's remnants of her prior personas that are just sort of patchworked together right now. And I don't think she's found a focus even as champion. And it also hurts that there's two women's titles. So, you know, you're always kind of, when there's two singles titles that are sort of equal to each other in a company, whoever has one of the belts, you're always imagining, okay, which one is the real top champion? And Bayley's in a way losing that battle right now, despite the fact that, you know, it's not Charlotte or Becky or Sasha Banks who are on top. You know, it's Liv Morgan, but I think Rhea Ripley and the whole Dom storyline casts a big shadow over what she's doing, but a lot of it's on her. She just doesn't seem to have, I don't think, coming out of the damage control storyline, that she had a lot of momentum and she seemed a victim of being picked on in a way where you felt sorry for her. So then to transition into let's rally behind her because she's a champion, as opposed to she's kind of struggling with how things fell apart for her. I think those two things have been in conflict, and it's stopped Bayley's momentum. But some of it is she just, like I said, I go full circle back to, she just doesn't have a voice as a character right now that I think is real defined.
Yeah, I think sometimes the problem with Bayley is the on-screen presentation, like what they give her and her character work, almost like contrasts what the like internet fan, like smart fan, like feels. I think like what Derek's saying here, that she's like unselfish in her work. And I think that that is true. Like a lot of the perception of Bayley, like we saw in WrestleMania, is what I was saying before, like she's this like great worker, like backbone of the women's division that like deserves something. But then, once she reaches that, they never really give her something on screen that makes you, as just a fan, like really get behind her. You go ahead. I'm done.
No, I was more just agreeing with you.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our next match. We have LA Knight versus Logan Paul for the United States Championship. Wade, how has this one been built for you? Are you into LA Knight going into Logan Paul's home and all that stuff?
I've been looking forward to this as a match and hoped that they would do it long before it was announced and they set it up. Two bombastic personalities, big talkers. I think Logan Paul has destroyed LA Knight on the microphone, or been overly harsh perhaps with LA Knight on the microphone. I think it was last week where it was just Logan carved him up, and I think probably went further than is prudent, to the point that if Logan wins, it seems like he's beating somebody who is this derivative Attitude Era relic pretender. And I don't think LA Knight's comebacks were great. You know, what low T Logan or whatever it was. So, I mean, it's not that LA Knight has been so bad that people are going to turn against him who are his fans, but he didn't rise to the occasion. Logan has just had better material. I think there's plenty to pick on Logan about, but maybe some things with Logan are off, like are not allowed, off limits. And with LA Knight, it's sort of like, yeah, it's old material, but Logan delivered it, I think, so effectively and just one after another about, you know, whatever the cosplay attitude era, you know, derivative of Rock and Austin and all that stuff. So LA Knight still has something to prove in this match. Logan Paul is a much more gifted athlete than LA Knight. LA Knight more experienced in the ring. So from a smoothness of action and exchange standpoint, I'm intrigued, not just with personalities, but match quality. Logan Paul's such a good athlete. And, you know, that's been a knock on LA Knight is, you know, there's sort of the obligatory botched mistimed spot every match that he has. He's gotten a little bit better as he's gotten more work in WWE. So there's a lot of things to look for here, but crowd reaction is one of them. I don't know if Cleveland is sick of Logan and thinks, stop saying you're from here, you give us a bad name, or if they're like, yeah, he's our guy, and we're going to cheer for him. And then how does LA Knight react to that? So there's a lot of moving pieces in this. I think, to me, I would stick with Logan Paul as US champion unless they have something, and they already have moved, they've already moved him into a bigger matches. So to me, I'd rather keep Logan Paul with the US title unless he wants to slow down his career or his current schedule. And I think for LA Knight, it's good for his career if he beats somebody of Logan Paul's stature and wins the US title. So I could see them going, I can see an argument for going that way also, but my prediction and my preference is to keep the momentum going with Logan, because I think LA Knight is more of a challenger at a SummerSlam level, which is good, but not somebody you want to spend a Logan loss on. And I don't know that LA Knight's impressed me enough where I want to give him a semi-prestigious victory and a run with a, you know, second or third title in WWE.
I think you're right that like Logan has outclassed LA Knight on the mic. I think that LA Knight, he's got a lot of praise for his mic work, and he's certainly, you know, the yeah catchphrase is really over. But for me watching it, I do find him too derivative and too cosplay-y, and Logan like, yeah, a little one note. It's a little, is he really a good promo in like a think on your feet type way, like someone that can, you know, really deliver like an Eddie Kingston, say, that, you know, I love, like, you know, he can say stuff that's really you know, feels like real and feels like off the top of his head, whereas LA Knight can a little bit feel like just always going through like the motions of the stuff that he knows that works, or stuff that he's taken from other people. And I think Logan's proven himself to be a pretty good talker. I think that there's definitely a big upside to keeping the title on him. Like, he, you can't get away from those Paul brothers, and him having a WWE belt is, I think, like very helpful to them, especially as they move into the Netflix era and stuff like that. But then I also think, like, with LA Knight, how many times can he lose or just like not get something? You know, how long has it been that we've been like, oh, LA Knight's going to get this, or he might get Money in the Bank, or he, and they're obviously high on him and they keep him on TV, but yeah, how many times can we go through this with him? Like, he has to win something eventually, or he just seems like someone that the company's not actually behind, but knows that a portion of the fan base really likes. So I am tempted to say that LA Knight wins, but that it's a short title reign, that Logan ends up getting it back from him quite quickly.
Yeah, I think that's a good option. Yeah, it's a good option to throw into the mix for a discussion, which is LA Knight wins it and Logan wins it back, and they extend this feud. I wouldn't rule that out as a possibility if they think they have more material to work with here. I just am not sure they have more material to work with here. I shouldn't say that. I mean, they can do it. I don't know if there's a fresh new chapter, but they can kind of continue what they've been doing. Maybe give LA Knight a little bit better material to work with, maybe help him out a little bit, so, you know, he's not doing some low T thing that doesn't really catch on. But you're right, as far as LA Knight goes, I mean, at some point, for him to keep his, the fans who see him as somebody who was a potential headliner at one point, I think WWE management, creative, top brass, other wrestlers saw him as a little bit more of a flavor of the month, and somebody that you capitalize on while the fans are reacting to him that way. But let's be real, there's not enough there in the ring or on the microphone to sustain being a top guy. So I don't think WWE is in search of a big win for LA Knight. I think they see him as a good SummerSlam opponent to lose to Logan, and then they move LA Knight to a mid-card feud, and he's a good upper mid-card guy but Logan is a crossover big time star. And I just, I get the sense that they see LA Knight as a guy to feed to Logan Paul to give Logan a win. I mean, I do, but I'm, it's not so open and shut that I just, my jaw will be dropped if they give LA Knight a win. I think it'll be a boost for LA Knight fans if that happens, because it will, like you say, give him a statement win that he's been looking for and maybe give fans a reason to stick with him and not see him as somebody who, yeah, was just a flavor of the month.
I think the layout of this match will be really interesting of whether it's good or not, because Logan has had some really impressive performances that are impressive because he's not like a trained wrestler, hasn't been doing this for very long. And but he's very good at doing like the big spot, you know, like his moment with Ricochet at the Rumble and stuff like that, something that you can almost kind of rehearse. And LA Knight isn't really a guy that there's like a big spectacular spot to do with, that he's more of a, I don't want to say boring, but boring like mechanical wrestler than we usually see like Logan in with, where he can do something that just like wows, wows the crowd. Lady B says, I still think Logan versus Cena is coming. I think they're absolutely going to do that match before Cena retires. Sean says LA Knight cannot lose. Like, yeah, like we were saying, he's come so close to getting like something, anything so often. We have a super chat here from Karthik, who sends 100. I don't know what that symbol is. Do you know, Wade? I'm really sorry.
Maybe yen?
Maybe yen.
Tell us, Karthik.
He says, I wasn't thrilled by the card, but the Bills have talked me into the building. Hot show. Punk Drew is challenging Cody Bloodline for feud of the year. Yeah, the card is awesome, as we've said. And we will get to the Punk Drew later on in the show. But yeah, I'm very excited to talk about that one.
I think Karthik, real quick, it makes a good point. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Seth. That wasn't thrilled with the card, but the Bills have talked them into the building. I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, I do think the build has been really good. I mean, like you said, we'll cover it kind of match by match. But going back to my original comments on the show, every match here deserves to be on the show, even though it's a lot of title matches. It isn't just the titles that make these matches feel like you need to tune in. And it isn't just a lack of a clear-cut singular main event that leads to ambiguity over which match should or will likely go on last. It's also that there's a number of candidates for a match to go on last, which is a credit to the build. They've gotten, I think, I mean, when we'll talk about, you know, Punk Drew, I think peaking a little bit early and feeling maybe a little stale going in. But that's, you know, more of a calendar issue than anything. And I think once the bell rings, they'll be fine. But overall, yeah, I think they've done a strong job with the build, and we'll get to it. But Priest Gunther, I think, gets points for being elevated on the, based on the build, to a much higher level than I think people thought when this was first a match we thought would happen. So I think Karthik's onto something.
Yeah, you can't really fault the build on any match here. I think you know, I don't want to just always make everything AEW versus WWE, but like last week we had the Blood and Guts, and when you look at that Elite storyline, I see that as just a massive drop of the ball. Like what are we doing here from like where this started? And like obviously you know, the match was good, it was spectacular and everything, but I don't think that the time that they had to build that they actually like used properly. I think most of us went into it just completely confused about actually what control of AEW means in that sense and all those things. Just
I wrote a scathing cover story on that match for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter this week that I think might be posted online already and is being mailed out today to our subscribers, mostly over the finish and the stiff chair shot that Corey Graves even mentioned on social media. But I didn't even get into the storyline aspect of it, but I have on podcasts, which is, right. What was at stake? Why didn't they define what was at stake more? What was Jack Perry willing to die for? You know? But it was a wild match, but it did feel like it was booked by a third or fourth grader who got fantasy camp day booking a wrestling match. I mean, in terms of, but I mean, I can say that about a lot of matches that are just over the top, violent with one spot after another that just numb you to the action. But that's a style preference.
I know, I did not to digress too much, but like it makes me very, very suspicious of that time that Tony Khan took the pile driver and wore the neck brace, because if it wasn't if it all wasn't going to be something that was in like a proper, you know, storyline where he lost control and the Elite took control, like something, you know, NWO like or whatever, I'm kind of like, why did we do that? Why did we do that? Okay, we got a super chat from Will Cooley. And he sends £2. Hello, Will, a great friend of mine. We could also hear on the torch as well. If Steph is Lady Deadpool, which Wolverine is Wade? Gosh, I don't know the comic books enough to answer that question. Wade, do you know anything?
I don't know. I was hoping maybe the chat room can jump in. I don't know either.
Yeah, give us your thoughts on that, guys. But thank you, Will. Always nice to hear from you.
If you call me Hugh Jackman, I'm fine with that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll take that. I know that much.
All right, up next, we have Sami Zayn versus Bron Breakker. So Bron Breakker already had his chance at Sami Zayn and Money in the Bank. And I was pretty shocked, actually, that Bron didn't win over in Toronto, because I do think that they've done a pretty good job with bringing him up to the main roster. But we saw on Raw Bron saying that he maybe didn't take Sami seriously because Sami has a comedy show, which he's doing as well in Ohio. But now he will take Sami seriously. So I think this one for me seems one of the most obvious. Like, I'm just going to go for Bron Breakker because I think it's his time to win this title. And I don't think he can lose twice because he's a young guy they're invested in. What about you, Wade?
I think this is one of the locks. I think they wanted to extend it to two matches, which is fine. They already had Sami and Jay win a tag match, which sets up Sami to have something relevant to do after losing the IC title. Bron Breakker is somebody they clearly believe. I'm petting my dog off to the side. He's used to getting a lock at this time. So that's why my arm is moving. I don't know. Do you want to come up here? Do you want to say hi? Come here.
The sacrifices we make to talk about WWE.
I know. Yep. If just petting him is the only thing I can do to keep him from getting even more rambunctious. All right. So back to your question. Yeah, Bron Breakker, I think they've done a really good job with him. And I think he's risen to the occasion. He was this patchwork of personalities in NXT. They tried different things with him. And I think there was some question about how is he going to work on the main roster? What persona is he going to take on? Is he going to have the range of personality when he's at a higher level? It's sort of like calling up a pitcher from the minor leaguers. You know, it's like, oh, he had a great pitcher in the minor leagues, but up against major league batters, is he going to do well? I think he's done really well. I feel like he is going to break somebody in half for real too often. Like, I hope that isn't actually a problem, but watching it does seem like, and part of it is just, you know, Dragunov just takes crazy bumps and you think he dies every time that he takes bumps, but those two together. But even on the microphone, I think Bron has been measured. He hasn't come across as just a guy yelling caveman sentence fragments, even though they could go that direction with him if they wanted to. The more soft-spoken negotiator with Adam Pearce and all that, there's something there to work with. And I don't think it's good for him to have a setback against Sami again. They've told the story. He underestimated him. Sami gave a nice spirited rebuttal to that, giving his fans hope, but based on, you know, the last angle they did with those two, giving Sami the upper hand, I think Bron Breakker wins, and I think he should.
Yeah, and I think freeing Sami up from this, like, if we're going towards another bloodline explosion, different types of bloodlines, he might be someone that's involved with that, like, given his history with the bloodline before. So yeah, I could see. I really don't see Sami winning this. I think I think this is the most obvious result of all the ones we're going to talk to. We have another super
and
chat.
And by the way, I think it'll be a really good match too. Like, I think these two will have a really good match.
I think it will as well.
Yeah.
I thought their match at Money in the Bank was good, but I think they'll build upon it this time. And Sami is,
I think that was meant really to viable. Leave something more. I'm sorry, Sapataka. I think that was meant to leave something more for them to do in a rematch. They knew a rematch was coming. That first match was good, but it felt like whetting your appetite for more at SummerSlam. And that's smart to do, by the way, especially when, you know, you're not the main event. You don't need to, you know, always try to steal the show. Sometimes you want to be a good part of a show.
For sure. Just Ricardo sends $2 and says, hi, Steph. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you too, Ricardo.
Ricardo added, that was dumb. Nice to meet you, Wade. I don't know why it was dumb to say nice to meet you, Stephanie, but also on all caps is nice to meet you, Wade. So maybe that's what Ricardo meant. Either okay. way. Good to meet you, Ricardo.
Oh, that was dumb. Nice to meet you, Wade. Okay, I get it yeah. now. Okay.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, yes.
I think what he means is he met you before and he meant to say Wade and he typed Steph and now he's feeling dumb, but he didn't want to do another super chat to draw attention to the correction.
Hey, leaving a super chat is never dumb. there are no dumb super chats.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, let's go on now to Damian Priest versus Gunther. I'll let you take the lead on this one, Wade. How do you feel about the build of this one so far and what we've seen from Gunther, especially?
You say especially Gunther. I think it's been equal. I think Gunther's a bigger star. I mean, no question. He's going to, if he doesn't win here, he's going to win soon and become world heavyweight champion. But Gunther is absolutely been spectacular. I mean, his persona of this just sort of level-headed, old school, professorial, intimidating, credible, dominant. I mean, I'm thinking of all these adjectives. I think he's exceeded the expectations even of fans of him when he was Walter wrestling internationally. I just think he's exceeded that. So, one thing WWE does really well is they take somebody and they say, what is the best setting to feature their personality and have them get themselves across? And with Gunther, it's standing on the stage with that big screen behind him. And there's this aura of just supreme confidence that could cause some fans to cheer for him, because wrestling fans historically kind of, you know, there's been a side of that, a side of the fan base that will cheer for that. But then he gets arrogant and mean. And I think in tandem with this Damian Priest storyline, it's been great, because I think Priest weirdly turned out to be a perfect opponent for Gunther at this time in Gunther's run, because Priest looked like a weak opponent at the beginning, but the way that Priest has said, I was raised in the streets, nothing was handed to me, I had to work for everything, I've been through hard times, that has turned him babyface sort of gradually. Everyone's sort of been with him every step of the way to like, hey, I like this guy. He's putting up with all these I don't know what adjective to use, all these goofs in Judgment Day acting like goofs, and he's the adult in the room. So you're sort of admiring him, and that foundation was built. But then to have Gunther just look down on him because he didn't get to go to the best wrestling school, he didn't have people telling him how great he was from the beginning. I think they've told just a really, really effective storyline. And Damian Priest has risen to the occasion. I don't think Damian is a top tier guy perpetually. I think you feed him to Gunther to strengthen Gunther, but from a fan interest standpoint, I think people are going to be really behind cheering Damian Priest in a way that I would not have predicted they could accomplish through storytelling 6 weeks ago. So they get a grade for the build here. Like you said, Stephanie, Gunther has been fantastic, but Damian Priest in his promos has been really good. And the story and the contrast of the personalities and their backgrounds has been a strong, strong build from WWE's creative team.
Yeah, I think this has benefited Damian so much, because I think when he won the title, because he held the briefcase for so long, that a lot of people thought of him as like a transitional champion, that he was, you know, just there for the next person that they really wanted to be the champion. And I think putting him in a feud with Gunther, where he's really been able to show some of his best attributes, has really worked. And Gunther, to me, there's been a lot of wild things that has happened in WWE over the past couple of years, but them like getting Gunther is one of the most unexpected things to me. Like, as someone that saw him in Europe before he came to WWE, just the idea that they would get him and present him like that. Because to me, like, Gunther's the scariest wrestler on TV. You know, it's not any of the Wyatt Six. It's Gunther, because if he doesn't, like, school you in the ring, he'll say something really horrible and cutting to you, or you're just like, oh, okay. And with such like with such authority and stuff as well. So yes. I love the presentation of Gunther. This one, to me, it's hard to predict, because I'm always shocked when Gunther loses. You know, I was shocked when Sammy beat him, but that was the right time. And Damian, I feel, would it be bad to take the title off him now when he's kind of like finding his footing more as champion than he's been. And when all the Judgment Day stuff is going on, and yeah, him and Rhea are the adults in the room. And I love that they are the serious ones that can talk to each other. While all this other like mess and drama is going on, like, why is Carlito there? You know, who knows? But then him and Rhea did say on Raw, you know, let's focus on SummerSlam now, and then we'll deal with all this other Judgment Day stuff, which makes me wonder, should he lose the title? And then we at least have, you know, a big Judgment Day storyline that he can get into. So, yeah, I don't know, but I'm going to predict Gunther, but I'll feel quite sad for Damian Priest if it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of time. It's a matter of weeks if he doesn't win Saturday, if Gunther doesn't win the title Saturday. I think Gunther's going to win. I mean, I think Gunther's too important, and Damian Priest isn't. He's done a great job in this build, and I'm looking forward to what he does next with the Judgment Day story, but I don't think he's a guy that you want Gunther not beating, especially with Gunther having lost to Sammy. So I think Gunther wins, and I think he wins clean, and I think the story for Damian afterwards is everyone in Judgment Day looking at him differently because he isn't champion. And yeah, and I think that's enough. I don't think you need interference or someone. You don't need interference backfiring, costing Priest. I think you give Gunther a strong, clean win and you move forward from there. I think people will still be into Damian Priest. He doesn't need to be world champion. And I don't think people go, well, now that he lost clean to Gunther, I don't care about him anymore. There's no shame in losing clean to Gunther. So I think they just do that. Now, maybe in the Berlin show, Priest gets a rematch somehow, you know, maybe they've got a good story in mind for that. Maybe they heat up another challenger pretty quickly for him. Obviously you can make the case Gunther winning in Berlin makes more sense. Historically, it's more, I don't know, you know, like a cooler moment for Gunther to win there. But I think you have to have a screwy finish and you have to have Gunther lose again. And I just don't think you want to do that at SummerSlam. And plus, SummerSlam's a big branded show, and you want historically significant title changes on one of your shows that you market as a big, one of your top brands of big events. And so when you have an opportunity to do a major title change on your signature shows, I think you also want to do that to protect the prestige of the SummerSlam title.
Yeah, I think the idea of Gunther winning in Berlin, sounds good on paper, him winning like in the country that like made him famous as a wrestler, but I think him entering as champion would be even cooler. I think there's a lot they could do with Gunther as champion, like returning to, you know, to where it all started. I think that would be really cool. Moving on, the next one I've picked, because as I said, it's how interesting I think they are to talk about. Cody versus Solo Sikoa. Talk about feeling sorry for people, Wade. Like, I feel sorry for Solo just with Jacob Fatu coming in. And I feel like a lot of the fan base is like, wait, if you now have that guy, then why is it this guy when it comes to Solo? And I'm not sure that he's the strongest challenger for Cody, other than him being part of the Bloodline. And I think Cody's going to win, but the only way I could see Solo winning is to further the Bloodline story in a way that I actually think would just be counterproductive to put the belt on Solo, especially with Jacob there. So this one, I'm going to go for Cody. How have you felt about the build and the positioning of Solo now that Jacob has come in?
Well, here in the United States, we're talking about vice presidential candidates a lot. And, you know, historically, presidential candidates want to pick a VP who won't overshadow them. So we have a history of sometimes weak, younger, you know, Dan Quayle comes to mind when George Bush picked him. You want somebody who isn't going to, from a charisma or standpoint, overshadow you. Even, you know, Hillary Clinton's pick of Tim Kaine was sort of like, he's, you know, just a gray-haired guy who adds some, you know, his experience and stability to the ticket, but definitely not going to overshadow Hillary. Jacob Fatu, if he was supposed to be the vice president to Solo as a leader of the Bloodline, is overshadowing him. It goes, it plays into the strategy of of if you want someone to be the centerpiece attraction, you don't want to bring somebody in who's going to overshadow them. And that is what happened. Jacob Fatu is amazing. People have anticipated him for years coming into WWE, and they predicted this would happen. So my thinking is it's intentional that WWE wasn't blindsided by Jacob Fatu being so good and making such a good, strong first impression. Solo was protected for a while, and then he wasn't. And I think WWE sees Solo as a guy we could get a SummerSlam main event out of, but we're not overly concerned with Solo being overshadowed, because I think we're moving towards Jacob Fatu and Rock and Roman Reigns. Those are the bigger names that are going to be in the mix. They're not going to want to make Solo look weak and inferior to Cody, but the build hasn't made me think that they're trying to even convince us that Solo is going to become champion. Like,
yeah,
they didn't want to set Solo up for failure. So they haven't even had Solo make like a really big deal out of, I need to take this title if I'm going to be the head of the table. And if I don't, I'm a failure. Like, there's no storyline that makes you think, wow, they've really made it difficult to choose who's going to win this match. I just think this match is about the title to a degree, but it's about the story of the Bloodline and the Cody dynamic, and the outcome isn't essential. Cody beating Solo doesn't unravel whatever else that they want to do. I'm really intrigued with the finish of this match, though, because you want to give Cody a strong win, but you don't want to undercut Solo as a head of the table. I think he is vulnerable to being defined down with a clean, decisive loss in the main event. So if they do that, it is a signal that Solo is going to be more of a spokesperson, the brains behind the operation, but the one, you know, pulling the strings, but not stepping up for the biggest fights. And maybe that's where they want to go with him. And I think we'll learn a lot about how they see Solo based on the match itself, the back and forth, how vicious he is, how dominant he is, and then how they escape making him look too weak if Cody does ultimately beat him, which I think will happen.
Well, there's a lot of talk about the finish and who we might see. We have Bonkers LFC saying Solo wins if The Rock interferes, but Cody retains because of Roman. Scott says Roman's music hits and distracts Solo. Roman standing in the crowd like the Shield, Cody wins. So the big question is, do we see Roman or even The Rock or maybe Paul Heyman? No offense, Paul, probably the third choice out of those three. But do you think that we're going to see a big return at SummerSlam that plays into this finish?
It's SummerSlam. All those make sense. So I won't rule any of them out. Roman is a distinct possibility, but not a given. I would be okay with Roman until, as we now call it, the Netflix era, as they call it, as we call it, or at least later in the year. I don't think they need him to come out at this stage of the game. I think people will feel a little let down. But if Roman's not ready to come back and be a weekly part of the storyline, you can still have him come back, because he could come back and get beat up and then disappear again. You know, we talk about AEW needing storyline support for this whole thing about the power structure and the company and the EVPs and Tony Khan. We need an explanation, and I hope WWE has it. I have faith that they have it, which is, why is Roman not returning Paul Heyman's texts? Or is he really not? Where has he been? Why has he been silent all this time? And if they're ready to tell that story, great. But we are at the beginning of August. I just don't know that they want to play their hand on one of their biggest storylines in August, going into a new Berlin pay-per-view title. To me, I don't think the timing is right. I think you want Roman to come back when you're either at the beginning of the Netflix era or just in the fall season. So some of it is just a calendar influencing me thinking it's that he won't show up. It's possible, like Scott George said, maybe Roman's music hits, but he doesn't come out. Boy, I think fans get upset by that.
I will be in the building upset.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, they could do that, but at their own peril. I think fans would rebel going, you basically teased us with an appearance that did not happen. So part of what's exciting about SummerSlam on Saturday is the fact that WWE's booking is strong right now and their characters are well built up and they have good stories. How do they get us to the next chapter when it does feel like there's a bit of a conundrum in terms of Cody Solo and making it feel SummerSlam worthy? And that's why if this match isn't last, it might be them admitting, yeah, we don't have that big card to play and we don't want to get your hopes up that we're going to play it. So just enjoy this for what it is. if it goes on last and there's no Roman, I'm curious what they do to propel the storyline forward. I'm not, it's, you know, is it just heating up Jacob Fatu? You know, Cody beats Solo, Jacob Fatu attacks Cody. I think one thing worth bringing up in this is Randy Orton, because mm-hmm. Cody gushed about Randy a couple Raws ago. What a great friend he is. There's no better friend. He's a friend. He was a friend for me. He didn't have to be, and he's a friend and a good friend. Okay, that's a sign in wrestling. Someone's about to turn on you or not be a great friend. So I think that's an X factor here that is, as we talk about, well, maybe it's not Roman yet. It seems like it's good timing for Randy to be an integral part of the storyline with Cody. And then that gets Cody away from the bloodline until they're ready to bring Roman back. So I think Randy, frankly, being involved in some way in this finish, bumping into Cody, maybe saving Cody from the bloodline. But then there's a Cody Randy moment to end the show where people go, ooh, something just happened there. Randy came to Cody's aid. But now it looks like Randy wants the shot now that Cody beats Solo. I think they can get away with ending on that note without Randy, without Roman or Heyman showing up.
Yeah, I could see Randy being there for Cody as like a, you know, an equalizer because Solo has the bloodline. And then, yeah, it ending with a big tease that Randy is Cody's next opponent. But I agree that, like, I don't think the timing is right for Roman to come back. I think it's too soon. And I think The Rock is a big factor. And I can see that. I can see Roman returning in the fall and that being the storyline that gets us through that fall season up until the Royal Rumble, where I then think we'll have The Rock and the storyline involves him building up to WrestleMania. I think they kind of do it like that. And we're just not really, we're not really there yet where we need it. Like, we're talking about this card where there's so many matches, every single match on here, we've got something to say about. So it's not as if we're in like any kind of a downer period as far as the storylines go. There's a lot going on. We've just got Jacob Fatu. I would like to have him to have some time, like just there to have spotlight on him before there's a Roman or someone like that to be the big thing that we talk about. So I don't think Roman is coming back at some of them. But yeah, I do like your idea about Randy being the tease that we get.
Yep.
Let's move on then to the women's championship match. Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley. This, as you previously described it, total soap opera storyline. I think it's divided some people. I will say my own feeling on it, it's like what we talked about before with the AEW Elite storyline. Even if this Liv and Rhea is not the best acted storyline, or if it's a little cheesy or whatever, at least this is feels like long-term booking that they're invested in. At least they've done something every week, and I commend them for that. Like, we know exactly what's at stake here. There's intrigue as well. So I've really liked it. I thought that Liv's video on Raw where she was throwing Dominic stuff in the fire, like, that just made me laugh, and that's not the reaction that they were looking for. But you know, wrestling has always had these melodrama storylines, and especially things involving relationships, and it's
Sunshine
always going to be a
Precious
part
in world-class championship wrestling mid-80s and Chris Adams, and I mean this goes way back.
It's the easiest thing to get people invested in when you, you know, when you put like a love, sex, whatever dynamic on the screen there. So this one, to predict, I feel like because it's been so good or captivating that I think Liv is going to win, because I don't trust Dominic at all. And I also don't trust some of the other men in the Judgment Day, like Finn Balor, but I see Rhea not beating Liv at this moment, because I think there is more juice to this because Rhea's so soon back. And also this is the best thing that Liv Morgan has ever done. I think she's one of those people that I feel like every year when I'm like, who should win the Women's Royal Rumble? There's just a ton of people going, Liv Morgan. And I'm always like, really? Because I didn't think it worked out for her at all the time that she was like hardcore Liv or feuding with Ronda Rousey. But this has definitely been the best thing that she's done, that they've really found something for her here. So I'm going with Liv. What's your pick on this one, Weird?
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think Liv and Dom are in on it together, but I'm less convinced mm-hmm. than I have been at times. I was trying to think, is there anything that disqualifies Liv and Dom from actually pulling a ruse on people and really being on the same page? And I don't think so. Then the question is, has Dom always been with her, or did he somewhere along the line decide his loyalty was with her? Did it have to do with a lack of communication with Rhea? That's sort of a go-to storyline in pro wrestling, which is, when I was in the hospital with an injury, you didn't visit me and you didn't talk to me, and this other person did. So that could play into it. My concern, if they go that direction, is I think Rhea should have been more suspicious of it, should have seen mm-hmm. it coming. You know, I was critical of Cody in a segment earlier this year on that too. You want your, with AJ, you want your baby faces to be wise to the possibility that maybe the heel isn't being on the up and up. And her, you know, Michael Cole reading her love note, social media love note was weird too. I wasn't mm-hmm. 100% sure what to make of what they did on Monday. It didn't detract from my anticipation for this match and the payoff to the story, but it left me slightly more confused in terms of especially Rhea Ripley and who they want her to be. It seemed like what they wanted is Rhea to fall for Dom because Dom chose her over Liv. And then she suddenly went from this sort of badass who has sort of a take it or leave it attitude to Dom, because you're my sub and I'm your Dom. They switched that up and Rhea showed vulnerability. And I understand maybe they wanted to play that hand right before having the rug pulled out from under her. But I think that's actually risky for her character, for her to go as far as it seemed they went with her being so happy, you know, licking Dom's face and kissing mm-hmm. him. So as much as I have faith in this story staying interesting, I have less faith that I'm going to think a couple decisions they made the last couple of weeks were the best decisions for Rhea's character.
Yeah.
But they've told this story well enough that maybe that has a very distinct purpose and will actually, based on the payoff on Saturday, have been a necessary ingredient. And so that's why we have to watch things play out. That's why we watch the show.
I was very shocked when Rhea ended up like taking Dom back. It was one of those, you know, really silly wrestling suspended disbelief thing when she said to him, I think it was a week after she returned, that he hadn't contacted her in like the 3 months that they were off. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I thought you guys were meant to be dating. So mm-hmm. she takes back from injury and you just don't contact your girlfriend. That's odd. And you're on TV with this other woman. But you know, it's wrestling. But yeah, I think that it's certainly something they've planned out. So any things that make me kind of feel like, I'm not sure about that, like we are taking Dom back, I will give them the benefit of the doubt because I feel like this is something they're investing in. Bonkers LFC says Liv retains because of Dom to try and help Rhea, but ends up costing her. Savat says Liv versus Rhea should co-main event SummerSlam if Roman returns. Where do you see this on the card? You said before you think it could main event, but do you still feel that way? Or
I think it could. It's on the list of possibilities, and I'm always looking for chances for tag team titles, especially in AEW along the way, or the women's title to headline a major show, because I think it boosts the prestige of the title to do it. Yeah. So when you have a chance to do it and it's not going to seem way out of place and like you're pushing it, I say go for it. You know, I mean, if WWE's about trying to make the men's and women's divisions as equal as possible, look for an opportunity to do it. I feel the same way about this, the world heavyweight title versus the undisputed title. If you can justify putting what's perceived as a secondary world title in the main event spot, do it so that you're softening the perception that it's inferior to the other one. So mm-hmm. between that and I think the crowd interest, again, some of it depends on what the finish is going to be. You know, if you want to end with Cody and Randy having a tense stare down, and that's the final beat of the that you want on the show for fans to think about, then that can be the tiebreaker or the decisive deciding factor. But if you have a great payoff for this Liv Dom Rhea storyline and they're thinking Liv is we want her to be as big of a star as anybody in this company, including Cody and Gunther. Mm-hmm. Well, she's got a show like SummerSlam and be standing tall at the end. But I think Liv probably retains the title. And so I don't think they want that to be the final moment on SummerSlam. So I'm leaning pretty strongly against it being the last match among the few candidates to be the last match, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm not ruling it out. And again, if they're going to have Rhea go over and stand tall and be, you can definitely end with this match. Some of this just depends on what the finish is going to be. I think Liv retains because Dom turns on Rhea. I mean, I think that's the safest bet. If you're, you know, betting a substantial amount of your own money, food and rent money, that's what you would go with right now. You're not going to take a chance and try to score big with longer odds.
I like Derek's comment. I think the key is when Dom does choose Liv, Rhea needs to convey anger without conveying any sadness or weakness. It needs to be Rhea's wrath and Rhea's revenge. And I do think that Dom will probably go with Liv in the end. And I don't want to see Rhea Ripley in any way being like sad or pining or heartbroken. I just want her to be angry, like extremely angry at both of them. And I don't want any weakness shown from her in that situation. Scott says clumsy Carlito comes out to ringside complaining about the broken PS5 to give Liv the win. I really hope not. I hope we don't have any Carlito with this. I think this storyline has been too much investment in it for the finish to come down to anything about Carlito and a PS5.
I get a kick out of Carlito as a background side character, but not someone who's central to a major title match. I mean, to me, I think the finish of this match sets up Rhea and Priest against Liv and Dom. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know if you can get Balor in the mix on that or not. It felt like they were teasing Balor and Liv having a thing for a little while, and now it seems like they moved away from that. So I don't know if that was...
Red herring, maybe.
Those are the words. I was about to say red herring. Like, it's just they threw something in there to get us to talk, but they don't want us leaning strongly that direction. Mm-hmm. So to me, I mean, Priest and Rhea against Dom and Liv feels like an unfair fight, but one fans would pay to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got to our final match now, and maybe it was a controversial decision, but I give the spot to CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, and I think it's just because I love talking about CM Punk. So I did say I was doing it in order of what I thought was most fun to talk about. So Punk and Drew, everyone knows that I'm openly biased towards Punk, but I'll just say a few things at the beginning here about this feud. I'm really, really into it. I think they've done a tremendous job with it, but I do think that Drew has been the star of this feud. I think he's really outclassed Punk anytime they've had to go head to head. And it is still so strange for me to see Punk in a WWE ring. And I think Drew being so good has made Punk seem even more awkward than the whole thing already is of him being back. And I thought that was quite evident on Raw when he was very, you know, just putting in those long pauses for people to cheer. And it wasn't quite coming as organically as you might have thought it would. Yeah. But then I also think that Drew's in a good position where there is so much material you can have on CM Punk if you're allowed to go for it. And I wrote about this week, about this stuff that Drew has been saying. And I pretty much said that all the stuff that happened with Punk in AEW, the brawl out stuff, and the Wembley thing, all the stuff that like where Punk proved to everyone that he, you know, he is basically a dickhead that can't get along with people. I feel like WWE is making money out of this in a way that AEW wasn't able to, even to the point where we've seen Drew last weekend take a photo with Jack Perry. You know, a lot of this feud is based on like this perception of Punk and Drew being able to say these things. He's even mentioned Colt Cabana on social media. So Drew might be like the first guy to make big money out of all the drama that Punk caused in AEW. As far as Seth Rollins goes, I wish he wasn't there. Like, to be honest, I don't think that it's needed for the feud. I think that Punk is trying to do a SummerSlam 97 with Shawn Michaels as a referee, with Undertaker and Bret. And I know that everyone has like such reverence for everything that Bret has done, and me too. Like, I'm in Canada now, but I don't think we need to pay tribute to everything that's ever happened. Yeah. So like Punk said, it's kind of a hat on a hat, which might be what Seth's outfit is at SummerSlam, who knows. But a bit of a ramble, but I'm really excited for it. I think Drew has to win because of all this stuff that's happened to him. But I'm interested to get your thoughts, Wade, on everything regarding this feud.
Yeah, so on our post show that we do on YouTube after Raw, we spent a lot of time talking on the PW Torch post show about the Seth-Drew Punk dynamic, and whether Seth has become more of a distraction. And I think in a way he's not adding to this match, but I think he's probably going to be essential to finish.
Yeah.
So Seth is in there to move on to the next thing. Maybe Seth costs Punk the match and Drew gets the win, but then Seth goes after, or excuse me, Punk wants revenge on Seth. So, Maria said that in the chat room. Seth was a bit of a clown show. I think there's a serious edge to what Drew and CM Punk are doing. In fact, Rich Fan's the one who brought that up. We're posting a 12-minute hot take, as we call it on our YouTube channel, on this, whether Seth was too goofy, too silly, and hurt the tone of things. And we got into the possibility that Punk, yes, as you said, Stephanie, in St. Paul, we had two on-site correspondents on our live post show on YouTube Monday night who called in, and they're like, yeah, the reaction to Punk wasn't great. It was positive. It wasn't like rejecting him, but it's sort of that worst kind of middle ground, which is like, well, you want us to chant your name? Oh, it took us a few seconds to figure that out. And now that you've explicitly told us that's what we're supposed to do, we'll do it for about 5 seconds and then we're going to peter out. It didn't come across as CM Punk peaking. It wasn't just a TV thing. Our on-site correspondents who joined Joe said the same thing, that this was not a crowd rabbit into CM Punk. And I think part of it is Drew has been so effective in his role. I also think it's tough when you have another babyface sharing the spotlight. Punk is in an unfortunate position where I think WWE fans, Seth is more of a WWE guy, and he's been a workhorse and he's been loyal to the brand, and he's defended him on social media and wanted to be the guy propping up the brand and standing up for the brand. And Punk is not an interloper. He's a returning hero in a way, but he's also a guy returning without the cause that defined his character, which was anti-corporate, anti-Vince McMahon. I think people feel good about the WWE brand. He can't be anti-WWE. It was an issue in AEW too. It was only a matter of time, I guess, but at first he was very pro-AEW, pro-Tony Khan. I think CM Punk's character feeds off of discontent that fans relate to. And Punk doesn't have that to play off of right now. So all he has to play off of is Drew McIntyre and injuring him, which the fans that this storyline is playing to are aware that Punk was, played into the perception he's a little brittle. He says he's not injury prone, but there's a track record there that certainly gives that impression to some fans. So Punk gets hurt in the Rumble. They, after the fact, create a storyline that Drew prayed for it and caused it to happen. And then, yes, Drew attacked him on Monday and exacerbated the injury, but that was a storyline. People see it as such. And it's taken Punk a long time to come back. And in the meantime, Punk has ruined a couple title matches. And as much as that was designed to be fans, oh, yes, screw Drew over. Drew deserves it. He was so mean on the microphone to you, Punk. He was so mean in the things he said to you. It totally justifies ruining title matches. I think fans want to see the title match they paid to see play out and not have Punk ruin it. So I think there's a lot of things that have worked against him. Punk showing up in the luxury instead of facing Drew. It's like avoiding a debate because you're scared you're going to lose. And Punk rolling out of the ring last night and then going, well, it's not because I'm scared of you, Drew. I'm scared what I'm going to do to you. And a lot of fans are like, well, that makes sense. You probably believe that, but it still looks a little lame. And then Seth says, get back in the ring. And Punk's like, yes, sir. You're the ref. I'll do it. Oh, you need me to do this? Stand here. It's like all of a sudden this anti-corporate guy is being somewhat accurately labeled the corporate guy by Drew McIntyre. And then Punk's on ESPN wearing a suit talking about selling SummerSlam. I just think Punk's character is a bit of a mess. That said, he's super talented. I think he'll find his way. I just think this hype went on a month too long, and I think Punk is ready to move on, and they'll have this match. The crowd will go nuts. It's super intriguing. hopefully Punk can stay healthy for the duration of it and get a good streak of matches going. Because I think what fans want to see from him also is him show he still can lay claim to being the best in the world. But that means actually wrestling matches that are really good and staying healthy enough to come back the next month or the next week for more.
I love that you mentioned his suit. Like the funniest thing about CM, one of the funniest things about CM Punk is when he can just, like, it's so easy for him, like, just to be corporate, you know, like turn up in a suit. There's a great video, and I don't know anything about baseball, so I can't remember the exact year, but there is a great video. It's when the Chicago Cubs won the World Series and CM Punk is there as an analyst, and he's with my favorite actor, John Cusack. And John is dressed like a regular guy, and CM Punk turns up full suit, like full suit for the baseball match. And I'm just like, that's so Phil, because sometimes the C is corporate, sometimes the C is capitalist, you know. But I think, like, to me, like, Punk, he is the heel in this. I know, like, he's not meant to be, but he has, you know, Drew injured him. That happens in wrestling. But he has really messed with this guy's life. And I think another big problem is, as a Punk fan, all his best stuff is completely, like based in reality, whether it's the pipe bomb or stuff he did with Eddie Kingston and MJF in AEW. And he doesn't have that with Drew. Drew is being CM Punk in this feud. He is saying the stuff where you're shocked by it and you're worried that they've gone too far. And that is true. He's being the truth teller. Whereas Punk, like, what can you really say about Drew? You know, the guy got fired once. Okay, he says that all the time. There's not really big thing that he has in him. And I think they almost tried to bring in, you know, some more like emotional stuff on Punk's end with this whole like bracelet. But it's not as if in AEW we saw Larry the Dog way more than we've done in WWE. I don't think we've ever seen him. AJ has like never come out, so it's not as if we kind of have that he's been presented as this kind of like wife and dog family man in a way where like the bracelet right. really. And at the end of the day, I mean, like it is just a bracelet. It's not even like his wedding ring or something, you know.
Yeah.
So it's been a tough one for Punk, and at some moment it has been like a tough watch, and I do always worry that Drew has said the wrong thing that is just going to explode everything for Punk, but
that you can Punk you know? Punk. It's almost like WWE has said, we're going to push every button we can possibly imagine with Punk. We're going to instruct him to leave the ring and then have an excuse for why. We're going to have him stand, you know, like this far, 2 inches from the bracelet, and obey Seth's rules not to snatch the bracelet back. It's his damn bracelet. It's symbolic of taking his family on the road with him. And he is following the rules because he doesn't want to screw up the corporate need to have a profitable SummerSlam with the attraction. CM Punk's true core character would say, screw the SummerSlam match, I'm taking my damn bracelet. If you want to cancel the match, cancel it. I know you're not going to, because I'm too big of an attraction and your fans want to see this fight. But instead he said, oh, Seth and Adam Pearce said I can't touch Drew, so I'm not going to take a chance on grabbing this bracelet. It's like they're booking him in a way to test him to see if he can grit his teeth and not snap. And Drew is absolutely getting the better lines on him. He's got better material to work with, and Punk needs to be healthy, have a string of matches. But I'm curious if it's Seth versus Punk, who do fans cheer? How do they book that? I mean, what Punk needs is a clear cut heel that he actually wrestles, who isn't as good on the microphone as him, who Punk can go after. And you know, is Punk sharp enough to go after, say, Logan Paul right now if they were to cross paths, or would Logan school him? But I mean, I think Punk just needs to move on from this situation. It's taken up too much time, but I'm not sure that Seth is the right follow-up either to get Punk back on track. We'll see.
The C in Punk, CM Punk, also stands for compliant, because yes, he is following all the rules in this feud. I feel like this has a real like danger of, and it's another Bret Hart thing, that Drew comes out of it as as the babyface. And it's a like Austin Brett kind of turn thing too, because Punk has just done so much stuff to Drew that I can't see the crowd not being in a way like behind him. I think we've lost weight there for a sec, so I'm just going to go through some of your comments. Fernando says, Drew has been killing it and is the MVP of this angle. I completely agree. He also says, Drew deserves to win this match. And if you're wondering when the Cubs won the World Series, it was 2016. Thanks, George. And hi to Connor. Fernando says, the match ends, the Drew and Punk feud, and a long, intense storyline with Punk and Seth will begin. Yeah, I think we're definitely heading in the direction of Seth going down a feud with Punk. And they have a lot of history. And when, you know, Punk first came back, it looked like they were setting up a match for them at WrestleMania. And I actually there's a video on my YouTube channel if you're interested in like the whole history of CM Punk and Seth Rollins, like actually hating each other and going back and forth in interviews and stuff. So check that out. But I can see Seth being in here to set up an upcoming storyline with CM Punk. Maria says, I think AJ is going to get involved in the match and distract Drew and help Punk win. I was thinking about that, if there is a possibility that AJ could get involved, just because she's been mentioned. We have the whole bracelet thing. And then Drew has mentioned his wife as well. And we have seen her. We saw her at WrestleMania when he won the title. And I think there's a lot of, since Punk has been back in WWE, there's a lot of support for AJ Lee coming back into the company. It's someone that fans would love to see. And if I could see her coming back at any time, it would be for this. But as well, I think that she's such an influential figure in women's wrestling, especially now looking at, you know, people like Roxanne Perez, Cora Jade, and even Sky Blue over in AEW. It feels like a lot of the young female wrestlers are doing an AJ Lee imitation. So I would feel like slightly bad if like AJ Lee's kind of big return to wrestling is just to be involved in her husband's storyline, because I feel like there's, you know, better for her. It would be better for her to just do a women's feud. And I'm not even sure if Punk would really agree with her being used in that way, but we'll see. And let me just see. Wade, are you back yet? Okay, I don't think so. We'll just wait for Wade to reconnect here. And Maria says, Drew and Punk is the hottest storyline in WWE. Agree. That's what my newsletter this week was based on, if you want to go to Substack and check that out. Boris, hopefully not the Boris Johnson, says Punk keeps getting cooked both on the mic and on social media. And Scott says, Drew deserves Gunther, but I think an Uso will get the spot. I think we have Wade back now. Wade, are you back?
It wouldn't be a show with us if one of us didn't end up with a Wi-Fi issue and have to leave and come on back. It's weird. I could see myself in the corner of the screen, but I couldn't see myself on the main screen. So I exited and re-entered, and it seemed to work. I could hear
Thank you.
Yeah, of
course. Okay, well, I was just going through the comments.
My dog grabbed the noisiest toy he has while this was all going on. So it's good timing. It's a big plastic jug, and I would have had to mute anyway. So good to be back, though. I did hear most of what you were saying while I was trying to troubleshoot.
Well, did you hear us mention AJ Lee? Like, do you think there's any chance that we actually see AJ Lee back on WWE TV?
Interesting. I do, but I don't. I think there's a chance. I wouldn't say I'm over 50% on it, but I'm not, like, I don't think it's a long shot. The fact that, you know, he has brought her up works, but it works in favor of her showing up. But I think it wouldn't be in this match. I think there's too many moving parts. I think it would make more sense in a one-on-one match with a little bit more build. So I think the seeds have been planted, but it isn't on my radar as a likely. Yeah, I'm trying to conjure up this scenario where it makes sense for Punk to have. Yeah. I think that would work against Punk's character at this point to have his wife show up and try to help him or create a distraction. I think he's got enough headwind with how effective Drew has been and being opposite of Seth also, and the way he's been booked. I don't know that you want, unless they're trying to turn him heel. I don't think that's the way to go.
I don't know. I don't think he'd want that for AJ too. He's a very proud of my wife guy. I'm not sure if he'd want her big return to be as part of his storyline. Yeah. But if we do see the next step in this as Punk and Seth Rollins, which they were teasing like before Punk's injury many months ago when he came back, where do you see Drew's direction being next? Because he has put so much into this feud and been so good at it. The question will be afterwards, like, can he be this great without CM Punk opposite him? So is there anyone you have in mind for Drew to go after next?
No. I don't. Do you have anyone who comes to mind? I'm just trying to think of the Raw roster right now, and who would make sense? Sami Zayn? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking, so if Damian Priest retains the title, I kind of see that going more like Judgment Day, like Balor wanting it. And then if Gunther wins, I'm like, he would have to lose to Gunther. I suppose that could be interesting on the mic, like two European guys going after each other. It could be something for Bash in Berlin. So I'd be interested to see how he does, just given how his persona is now against someone like as serious as Gunther. But the only reason I'd be put off doing that is just like the fact that he has to lose, but there's no one else that really jumps out at me as the person.
I have faith in WWE that they've thought about it. They've got something planned. Drew's a big star. I think he's got momentum. He's been sharp on the mic. He's been good in the ring. I don't know that having a heel feud for Drew and Gunther is great for either of them. So I would lean more towards a strong babyface. But I mean, when Drew's going after Punk in a top feud, it does seem like, I mean, it's always been the case with Drew. I feel like if he doesn't have the world title or he's not fighting for it, it feels like he's in a spot lower than he should be in. He's not the type of character that does well and feels natural outside of the world title picture. And so, but I don't know how you get him back in there if they do have Gunther win the title. Now, with Priest as a babyface, maybe you delay Gunther winning the title and we're all throwing a curveball and they go with Drew instead. Against Priest and Drew wins Priest's reign. I don't think so, but when they should have something really good for Drew to do, and I it doesn't seem like the, unless we're forgetting something obvious, I don't think they have paved the way for something obvious at this point.
Okay, final prediction. I'm going with CM Punk wins thanks to Seth Rollins, where he does something resembling Shawn Michaels, and we get that. Sorry, did I say Punk there? I meant Drew. Drew wins this one
because
I
of believe Seth. That
he has to, because of Seth. Yes, and you win.
I'm with you on that. When we think about who Drew can wrestle next, and we're looking for a baby face, if they want to go somewhere different with Punk, then Seth could cost Drew the match, give Punk the win, and then you have a ready-made feud of Drew versus Seth. I mean, can is that fresh enough? Can you do that? The dog's making a little appearance in the corner there.
Hello, finally.
Hey, bud. Hi. Yes, your walk is soon, bud. Yeah.
He knows we're coming to the end. He's been listening, and he's like, "This is the last match." He's been following along.
Yep. There he is. So really, I mean, I thinks someone's going to win because Seth does something. I mean, that's why he's in this match, right? So either in a Seth Drew makes sense in a face heel dynamic better than Seth Punk. So maybe Punk moves on to something completely different, and maybe Punk goes after Gunther next, And so, but then I almost need, so Seth costs Drew the match. Punk gets a win. He earns a title shot against Gunther as a result, and then Seth and Drew go fight for the rest of summer.
Gunther would destroy Punk. I'd be really up for seeing it.
Punk is an ex-MMA guy. What's Gunther ever done?
True. Yeah. One that I really hope we don't get, Fernando must be messing with us here. He says Drew versus the Wyatt Six. Just keep him away from all that. And Maria says the fans have been waiting for Seth versus Punk. And Yeah, I think so. As I said, they've telegraphed it before.
Yeah. The issue is just, is that healthy for Punk to be against somebody who might get more cheers, and how does Punk handle that, especially if Seth's, you know, very silly and over the top and all that, but when Seth gets serious, he might outduel Punk. But maybe Punk's up for it. I mean, obviously Punk's a master of the microphone. There's no reason to think he's completely lost it. He's showing more than a glimpse of having a real sharp edge to his mic work. So maybe, but is Punk dressing down Seth for being over the top with a gimmick that fans love to participate in going to resonate well? I mean, I just don't know if you're WWE, you want split allegiance that, you know, that can be bad for Punk and also not great for Seth. I just think everyone should just be matched up heel face. Let fans cheer for, not have to choose between two people they like or two people they don't like at this point.
I truly worry when Punk has to promo against Seth, because given Seth's outfits and everything, it sometimes leads Punk into coming out with things where I'm watching at home being like, oh no, you didn't just say that. It's very much like when you're watching MJF with any non-American. You're like, please.
Yes, yes.
Well, weird. When I asked you to do this, I said it's usually like 30 to 45 minutes, and I've kept you and Emo for an hour and 23 here. So thank God it wasn't an AW pay-per-view, or we'd be on all that.
That's right. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's been so amazing to talk with you, Weird. And this card, it's a great card. So it was a great show to have you on, because every single match, like, we had a lot to say on and a lot to dissect. So thank you very much for your time today. Please tell everyone where they can find you and everything you're doing now with The Torch on YouTube.
Yeah, so on YouTube, it's just search PW Torch or youtube.com/PW Torch. We do live post shows after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We have on-site correspondents, video callers, rotation of co-hosts, so it's not the same people you're hearing from every week. It's a real fun. We have real good, just like you do, a good lot of chat room regulars and good interaction with them. We stream live. You can find the link at pwtorch.com. My main website, in my TV reports during Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, I do detailed write-ups with analysis. And finally, we have tons of podcasts. So search Wade Keller on your podcast app, and you can download the post shows if you prefer to listen in podcast format. That's a red logo show. When you search Wade Keller, we have our blue logo show. That's our main flagship, along with some cool flashbacks and big name interviews. That includes yesterday's flagship with Greg Parks. We covered a lot of AEW and WWE topics. And then finally, search PW Torch, and you get a whole other lineup of shows from a whole variety of hosts with shows dedicated to AEW, WWE. The 90s past cast is really cool, where they review a newsletter from a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter from 30 years ago this week, and just go into my reporting and what our columnists had to say about things and dissect it. So real cool lineup there. That's also free. Search PW Torch. Finally, pwtorch.com/govip if you want to be a VIP member. Unlock over 35 years of archives and get ad-free versions of our shows and a ton of VIP exclusive shows like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich and Wade, our post pay-per-view roundtables, and more. We're on Patreon, Spotify, and more. pwtorch.com/govip.
Well, I introduced you as a legend, Wade, and you are. And one of the coolest things that's happened to me over the past couple of months is getting to do things with you, getting to be on your Dynamite Post show. It's just been really awesome to get to actually talk to you, and having you on here was fantastic. So thank you so much.
Awesome. It's been great doing shows with you, Stephanie. And I'm really enjoy conversations with you about wrestling. It's been a fun addition to the rotation to get to talk wrestling with you regularly. And it's been fun having you host and being thrown to instead of throwing to you. It's a little, in some ways, more relaxing, although, you know, there's something about sort of being in charge of the topics that's relaxing, but not having to be in charge of the chat and all that. So anyway, it's been fun. You have a good group of chatters here too.
Yes, thank you everyone that has tuned in to watch us. It's been really great having so much activity on the chat. The next time you'll see me here on Fightful is going to be at the end of August, where I'll be talking about Bash in Berlin, as well as AEW All In. God knows how long that one will be.
Oh, man.
I know. Yeah. So stay tuned to my Twitter, and I'll tell you who will be joining me for those shows. You can find me on Twitter at Stephanie M. Chase. You can find me here on YouTube at Stephanie Chase Wrestling. I just last week uploaded an interview with Athena from Ring of Honor, the Ring of Honor Women's Champion. I have a big interview coming tomorrow that I will be putting up as well. So make sure you're subscribed.
With who? Sorry.
I'm not going to say weird. I can't give it away.
I figured that. That's why.
You got to give them something, you know, you got to give them anticipation of who it will be. But I promise it won't disappoint, guys. Right. It's not an indie worker. No offense. and also go find me on Substack, where I've started writing weekly about things in wrestling. And this week I wrote all about CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre, and why I've liked the feud so much and all the Punk AEW stuff. And I also talk about WrestleMania in London and that possibility, and what I, as a party pooper downer person, think about the idea of WrestleMania in London. So go check that out, guys. Thank you so much, Weird. Thank you to Emo as well, who sacrificed his walk. I hope you guys have a lovely walk.
It's like 90 degrees. He won't last long anyway. So he's happy.
Thank you so much, Weird. And I'll see you all again next time. Bye.
Thanks for having me on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.